When the word righteousness is used, what generally comes to your mind? What does righteousness mean? If you were to write on a piece of paper, righteousness means to me, and then what would be the answer? And of course, righteousness means being fair, being just, treating people and God with equity, giving them exactly what they deserve, and never taking away from that which somebody has a need of. And so discipline often is necessary to keep righteousness in its proper position. And I think most of us would have to agree that in our nation right now, righteousness is dropping very quickly because people are not being treated fairly. And people who do treat people unfairly are not being properly dealt with. But God has always sought fairness. That's his nature. He is a God of love, a God who cares about the needs of others. And so he seeks fairness, he seeks justice, and he always wants the best interests. And that's why it's such a pleasure to be servants of God. When we look at all other realms of authority, when we look at how man treats man when they get into positions of authority, to have a God with unlimited power who cares about the needs of others, even to the point where they are higher than his own needs, that's a God that we could not even imagine. That's a God that is so great and so wonderful. And that's the God that we serve, but it comes with a price. Because what God wants for me, he wants for everyone else. And unfortunately, when I slip up, because I don't always treat people fairly, I don't always give people exactly what they deserve. And when I do, God says, that's a sin. And the wages of sin, the price of sin, is banishment from him and from all that is good throughout all eternity. So when Jesus died on the cross, that was an act of love where God could once again restore righteousness by paying the price of what we took from someone else. So, but there's no place for selfishness. There's no place to have a desire to put our needs above someone else's. And so if everyone is to be treated fairly, then those who seek to disrupt that have to be stopped. And that's where the idea of discipline. By the way, this is a lesson not on discipline in our culture, although that's where we're going to start, and not necessarily discipline in the family. It is a beginning of a series on the concepts of church discipline. Because I checked my records, and we haven't looked at this subject since 2014. That's a ways back, almost 8 years ago. I don't usually like to do that. But I think we'd all have to agree that we're witnessing in our society what happens when the needs that other people have and are violated by someone else and it's not dealt with. What happens when tolerance and indulgence for sin takes the place of righteousness? And so we're seeing a lot of unfairness, a lot of victims, a lot of serious problems. And of course, God has seen this many times. So many times in the flood, in Sodom and Gomorrah, in the seven nations of Canaan, in Babylon, in Assyria, in Israel, in Rome, in Greece. And sadly, he's starting, or maybe not starting, he's seeing it pretty starkly here today. And it all starts with this passage. Because a sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. And this is the unfortunate counterpart of pity and compassion that rejects or looks past the victim to the criminal. And suddenly we pamper the criminal because of this problem or this problem or this problem, and we forget there's a victim. And not only do we forget there's a victim, we forget that there's a God who demands that the person who committed a crime be sentenced and punished speedily. Now, if police were on every corner ready to pull you over if you were speeding, it wouldn't take very long before we'd start realizing, you know, I better quit doing this because I'm going to get caught. And getting caught, sadly, it shouldn't be that way. We should want to do it because it's right. But the fear of being caught keeps most people doing the speed limit, especially if there's a cop next to you. You notice how things change drastically when you're driving next to a policeman? Because now everybody's aware, and they know. But because sentence is not executed speedily, we've seen a tremendous uptick in speeding. So, but when a society is more concerned about criminal rights than a victim's rights, there's going to be some consequences. And it doesn't have anything to do with intolerance. It doesn't have anything to do with you don't have any pity, you don't have any compassion on the person who committed the crime. Well, I do have pity and compassion, but that doesn't change the fact that they took something from somebody else, and God has a demand that we have an obligation, because God focuses on the innocent victim. Now, certainly the punishment must be fair, and the punishment must fit the crime. But there must be punishment. God made that very clear, and that's the whole role of civil government, and actually the whole role for parenting. You shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Now that sounds pretty harsh, doesn't it? In our culture, where criminals are pampered, this sounds pretty awful. But where did it come from? It came from our righteous God. Because this will stop evildoers from practicing evil. If it is not executed speedily, then things are just going to get worse. So, as God goes on to say in Deuteronomy, those who remain shall hear and fear. And hereafter, they shall not again commit such evil among you. Most of you here remember your parents, your grandparents saying, we used to go to bed and not even have to lock the doors. We didn't have to worry because the people in this country, I mean, certainly there's always going to be a few wild animals out there, human beings who are evil and wicked, but not to the level of what we see in our culture today. And of course, the downward spiral pretty much works like this. When parents don't execute judgment, back in the 60s, you remember, what's the name, Benjamin Spock? And he came out with this brilliant idea that children should not be disciplined, that children should be allowed to explore and develop and make their own decisions with as little parental interference as possible. And I think a lot of what we're dealing with today in civil government, a lot of what we're dealing with the general overall anarchy, was based here because parents didn't execute judgment. And those children went to school, and the teachers did not execute judgment, so those pupils became worse. And then the coaches didn't execute judgment, and then the employers don't execute judgment, and when judges... And so you see how it progresses, and that's where we are. We started with the children, then we went to the teachers. It took a long time. I mean, the children were first, but the teachers, it took a while for the teachers to go along. Of course, they're there now, and now so are the coaches. And employers are getting more and more lax in these things, as are the judges in our culture. But you know, God doesn't tolerate rebellion. If we don't step in, He will. So he gave parents, teachers, employers, civil government, and the church the obligation to teach self-discipline, to punish, to cause people to fear and respect the needs of others, not for fear of punishment. I mean, that's how it starts, but That's how we instill righteousness, brethren. When a child wants something from his brother or sister and snatches it away, they are learning something that will ultimately force God to send them to eternal punishment. Because children must learn that we have the same needs that they have. And that when we take what they have, we violated them. Now, it's funny how this works, because it always, the other way around, you don't even have to teach. When somebody takes something that's yours, you immediately understand that's not fair. It's not right that he took that. I need someone above me to come in, or I'm just going to rear back and take it myself. Either way, the problem is that if we don't teach our children, we won't have students, we won't have players, we won't have citizens, and we won't have Christians who understand righteousness. And so when the Lord sees a certain point, he gets involved. Always has, always will. So it starts, all right, I will give you parents the opportunity to train up your children. If you don't train them up properly, then I will have civil government take care of them. If civil government won't take care of them, then I'll step in. When the Lord saw, and I you probably already read the verse while I'm talking here, so I won't read everything, but God saw that every imagination was evil. Now, why is it evil? Well, partly because of the violence, but partly because people only thought of themselves. They didn't think of other people. They didn't care about their needs. My needs are the only thing I see. If my needs require you to suffer, then you need to suffer, because my needs are more important. And when God saw that that permeated the whole culture and that there wasn't anyone left to bring things back where they're supposed to be. Verse 7, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth. For I am sorry that I have made them. Verse 6 says the same thing. The Lord was sorry. And he was grieved. You know, those of us who understand righteousness, we grieve over these criminals who are not being taught not to live like that, because we know the ultimate end. It's not that we don't care about them. It's not that we want them to be punished out of vindictiveness. We want them to be punished so they can ultimately be converted, so that they can ultimately learn the lessons and they don't have to be cast into the eternal pit of darkness. I don't want that for anyone. I don't care what their nature is. We need to intervene. But you know, if the civil government, if the parents, the teachers, the civil government do not instill these things, we're at a real disadvantage. Because all we have is the gospel. We don't have a big stick. We don't have anything to bring them, because God didn't create the church for that. God created the church to discipline itself. But Paul said, those who are in the world, God will judge. So, in the end, God brings discipline. That's Peter's whole point here, as he warns us of the same thing. You will ultimately face and receive the things done in the body. So if God didn't spare angels, is he going to spare you and I? If God didn't spare the ancient world, but saved Noah? And if God turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them to destruction because they wouldn't be self-disciplined? Now, if somebody stepped in, if they'd listened to Lot, you remember Lot comes in there and they say, this man has sought to be a judge over us. We're going to do worse to him than we were to the angels. Where'd that come from? Where'd that attitude come from? Well, it came from years of self-indulgence. Years of being able to do what you want without any consequences, and suddenly someone comes in and says, here's the line, and you can't cross that line. And instead of saying, oh yeah, we can't cross that line, they say, we need to get rid of this man who's drawing a line. And that's, I'm afraid, what we're seeing today with this animosity toward the police. I feel so sorry for these men. Now, I understand what happened yesterday or what was revealed yesterday, one of the most disgusting things you could ever imagine. But human beings make mistakes, and they'll pay for their mistakes, but you don't take a broad brush and say, that's all the police. If we go there, then civil government will lose its primary function, and God will have to step in. And I think we're all very much aware that it's getting closer and closer and closer to a tipping point where God may have to step in. And we just have to pray, Father, because we can't do anything about this. We can't bring this back. I can't go out and preach to the civil government. I can't go to Congress and say, look, guys, you need to get this under control. We need to start executing murderers, and we need to start executing rapists, and we need to start really putting things back the way they are. But you know something? They're not going to listen. Matter of fact, they're going to do the same thing to me that they did to Lot. Now, I want you to notice, the reason I bolded this is I want you to see, it's very interesting. We talk sometimes about how if God says something twice, it must be important. What if he says something three times? Delivered righteous Lot, who is oppressed by the sensual conduct of the lawless. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment. Now you can't see it as well in the English, but righteousness and unjust, they're antonyms. They're words that are the exact opposite. A righteous person is just. He's fair. He treats people with fairness. If I find somebody's door unlocked, I'm not going to go in their house and take anything. I'll probably lock their door, or I'll call them and say. If I find somebody's cell phone, I'm not going to keep it. I'm going to find and give it back. Because that's what righteous people do. Righteous people are concerned about the person who lost the phone. They're concerned about the people whose door is unlocked or whose car is unlocked or whose wallet is lying on the floor. And they're going to do everything they can to get it back to them because they have justice. That's what righteousness is. Lot was a righteous man. And he was a godly man. And as I said earlier, righteous Lot was a righteous man with a righteous soul. Too many righteousnesses? You think it was emphasized too much? I don't think you can find this anywhere else. Why was he righteous? First, because he was oppressed by the sensual conduct of the lawless. Now, of course, we read the account and we see that these men, first of all, they were homosexuals, but it wasn't, I don't think, the homosexuality as much as the raping. Two strangers come into town and the whole city gathers around to drag them out. Tormented. He was oppressed with their sensual conduct and their lawlessness. Second, he tormented his righteous soul from day to day each time he heard or saw their lawless deeds. You know, I like to get up in the morning and I like to look at the news. I go down through, I've got Fox News on my computer. I go through, I get about halfway down and I just think to myself, I can't take anymore. I am so disgusted with this nation and the things they're doing. And you know why I do that? Because I'm righteous. Because that's what righteous Lot did. And I'm not bringing this up to brag on myself. I'm bringing this up for you to think about. What do you do when you read the paper? And how do you respond with the unfairness that is going on in our culture and the people who are being abused and the people who are being harmed by people who get arrested, taken to court, they don't even have to give any money, they just get a free bond and they're out and then they get arrested again. I think I read one time, one guy, he got arrested two or three times in one day for the same crime. Because he went to jail, but he didn't go to jail. They let him right out. Well, I said, well, nothing's going to happen to me. I'm going to do it again. Well, he does it again. Police come, take him to jail, let him right back out again. So I'm going to do it again. What do you think's going to happen? righteous Lot was a righteous man with a righteous soul because he was oppressed. He didn't like what these lawless people were doing to other people. Wasn't fair. Wasn't right. He didn't like what these lawless people were doing to God and to God's law and to innocent victims. And we shouldn't either. Second, he was tormented. Because we know where this is going to lead. A lot of people are going to lose their souls. A lot of people are going to lose their lives. And these are the people who are going to become the evil companions that are going to be impacting my grandchildren and your grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. Tormented. Oppressed. The earlier translations have vexed. God knows how to deliver such godly men and women. He delivered Lot. The rest of them died, but he delivered Lot. What's the story there? Well, remember that previous slide? God punished angels. God punished the men in the flood. God punished Sodom and Gomorrah. But he delivered righteous Lot because that righteous man tormented his righteous soul from day to day, seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. That's why I say you're looking at the news, you're listening to the news on the television, and you just can't take anymore because of how patently unfair our criminal justice system is becoming. All the while proclaiming we are becoming more and more just and more fair and more tolerant. And yet, that tolerance is leading to a culture where even if you lock your doors, you don't know if your house is going to be unbroken into when you get home. I don't know if you knew this, but if you get your car stolen, police are just going to kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, we've got too many more important things to do. And the car thieves know that. They're not going to get caught. They're not going to get punished. They don't even care anymore. There's too many other bigger crimes which are also not being solved. Now, that's oppressive. And that's tormenting. So, I guess the question is, as you compare your response to what I've just said about what Lot's response was, would you say, I'm like Lot? I'm righteous like Lot? Lot isn't put here because there's anything wrong. Matter of fact, three different times he said, everything is right. He's righteous, a righteous man with a righteous soul, tormented and oppressed and disgusted with their lawless deeds. So, God takes charge. Now, we see this in Jerusalem as well. We've talked about this several times the past few years, but let's just read through the story. Let those who have charge over the city draw near, each with a deadly weapon in his hand. This is Jerusalem. God's had enough. God's going to allow them to destroy. Now, he's going to use Nebuchadnezzar to do it, but I think we're all aware that of the millions of people in Judah, God took, 5,000 with the first group, 2,000 with the second, and maybe 3,000 or 4,000 with the third. So out of all those people, only about maybe 10,000. The rest of them, they all died. Suddenly, six men came from the direction of the upper gate, which faces north, each with his battle axe in his hand. One man among them was clothed with linen and had a rider's horn. And he called the man clothed with linen, who had the rider's inkhorn at his side. And the Lord said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and put a mark on the foreheads of the men who sigh and cry over all the abominations that are done within it. God's interested in that. God doesn't want us to enjoy. You remember what he says about to the Romans about those whom God gave up? He said they not only practice, but they heartily consent with those who practice. In other words, they don't have any problem. I like watching terrible things on television. It's just so entertaining. It's so entertaining to watch people be violent. It's so entertaining to watch people have sexual activity outside of marriage. Where are we going? I want a mark on the foreheads of the people who are sick and tired, we might say, who are tormented and vexed, who sigh and cry or of the abominations. You're not going to find somebody like that being entertained by it. You wouldn't see Lot tuning in to watch the next soap opera and get to watch the next series of things that torment his righteous soul. Go through the city. Because God's preparing for another flood. Another Sodom and Gomorrah. And he's looking to deliver people like righteous Lot. So God does know how to identify. To the others he said in my hearing, go after him through the city and kill. Do not let your eyes spare. Don't have any pity. Utterly slay old and young. Old and young men, maidens and little children and women. But do not come near anyone on whom is the mark. The Lord knows how to deliver the ungodly and how to deliver the godly. So those like Lot who sigh and cry are going to receive that mark. And we're talking about that this morning because that's what the Holy Spirit does when we're baptized. He puts a mark. Now we can lose the mark by becoming ungodly and unrighteous. But as long as we have that mark, and we're sighing and crying, when something bad happens, the Lord will not allow anything. Now, it doesn't mean we won't die. There's an interesting passage in Isaiah where it says that the righteous are being taken away and the living are not taking it to heart. They don't realize that because these righteous people are being taken away, dying in peace, because God's delivering them, so they don't have to see Nebuchadnezzar. And they don't have to watch those people. Remember what God told Isaiah or Jeremiah to tell them? Those who are for pestilence will die of pestilence. Those who are for captivity will go into captivity. Those who are to die by the sword are going to die by the sword. Go after him and kill. Let not your eye spare nor have any pity. That's scary. That's a frightening thing. It's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of God after grace is gone and the only thing left. There won't be any pity then. Won't be any mercy then. God will treat us righteously. So once again, the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. That's exactly what Ezekiel is teaching. That's exactly what we learn from Lot. So how we feel reveals our righteousness and our godliness. Now here's the problem. We've had this going for so long that it's just to the point where I don't even care anymore. I just don't care. Don't get there. Don't go there. That's not righteousness. It's not righteousness when we say we don't care what ungodly people are doing to innocent people. That's not righteousness. We have to care. We can't get apathetic. But based on Lot, are you enough like him that God would say, yeah, put a mark on him. He's one of mine. Well, as I said a moment ago, it always begins in the home. The rod and rebuke give wisdom. But a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. It's just a sad reality. Spock was wrong. Benjamin Spock was so wrong. He set up such a terrible situation. I think a lot of what we're seeing today is come as a result of that entire generation who, worldly people, not members of the church, but worldly people who stopped disciplining their children, who started thinking, okay, we need to let our children explore. We need to, well, the only thing they're going to explore is how to become fully set to do evil. So he who spares his rod hates his son. But he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Discipline is important. Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. If you follow this crazy psychologist's advice back in the 60s and let your children make their own decision, you will set your heart on his destruction. Now, these are critical passages, both for our convictions in living in this nation, this nation of indulgence, this nation of misdirected pity, misdirected sympathy. The innocent victim deserves a sympathy. I don't care what the criminal had growing up. Yeah, there's probably a lot of things that led him to that situation. But he still needs to be punished. Now, he might mitigate. We might say, well, because of this, 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 and this, we're going to... And that would be up to the civil government. But to just say we can't punish because this poor guy never had the ability to learn how to do these things, you're just setting up the whole country. Do not withhold correction from a child. If you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You will beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from the grave. Now, that's how I raised my family. I'm sure that's how you raise your family. And that's how I hope our children are raising our grandchildren, and our grandchildren will raise our great-great-grandchildren, and on down the road we go. But it kind of seems to me that there's a general laxity that's trickling down. And that what we're seeing in the world is coming in to the homes, first of the ungodly. But a lot of times, even the godly don't have the same convictions. And they're not vexed. When they see their grandchild do something that shouldn't be done, and they watch their child not properly dealing with it, and they don't feel that torment, they don't feel that vexation, they don't realize, this is where this is going to end up. I need to talk to my kid. Look, you need to wake up. This is not how you were raised. And if you raise your children like this, you're not going to like the end result. So the question, do we still reflect Lot's attitude of righteousness? When we see this, we see this in new converts. When we see this in our children, we see this in our friends' children. I know it's, you know, there's a fine line there between meddling and helping. But sometimes we have to take a chance and try to help. Because godly parents instilling self-discipline are going to be a blessing both to that child and to everyone who will have to deal with that child for the rest of their life. Unruly children are not only disruptive, but they just diminish their own success. He who ignores discipline despises himself. That's God's verdict. It's true. Because every time we don't control ourselves, and we bring misery and blight into the lives of other people, we are diminishing our own ability to be happy. And you hate yourself. If you go into a classroom and you won't listen to the teacher, you won't study, and not only will you not listen and you won't study, but you're going to make sure nobody else can listen and study. That's not righteousness. That's not fair. All godly parents of successful godly children have one goal: train them up in the way they should go. But sadly, in our culture, there's a lot of ungodly influences out there. So I've got this child for 2 hours a day or 6 hours a day, and the school has them for 8 hours a day, and the video games have them for a half an hour, and the computer has them, and pretty soon you start seeing my influence is being diluted. And that passage in Hebrews, which is talking about discipline in the church, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble. How many times has a person's cell phone, kid gives, or the parents give the child a cell phone, the child uses the cell phone to get into pornography, to get into all kinds of terrible activities, and suddenly everything you've been fighting for your whole life and this root of bitterness has sprung up and causes trouble. And by this many become defiled, because now they become the evil companionship. And now you think you're saying to your child, look, go play with this person. This person is a member of the church's son. He'll be, man, I can't even tell you how betrayed I felt when I realized that those kids that I was letting spend in other people's homes were worse than the most ungodly people. But I didn't know it. I didn't know it until my kids finally told me 10 years later. And it's not always the fault of the parents. Roots of bitterness sprung up. And so we have to be so vigilant, because those roots of bitterness can destroy everything. And suddenly, we've got this 18-year-old kid that we worked so hard for, and we did everything we could, and then we find out later there was this root of bitterness, maybe this teacher or this friend, or this video game or this entertainment, and it undid everything that I tried to do. What a heartbreak. But that's the world we live in now, and we just have to understand that parents are doing their part, but these roots of bitterness out there, you've got to be vigilant. You're going to be asking a lot of questions. Well, you know, it's getting late here. Let me see how many. I got one left. So let's just quickly run through this. God created civil government to bring stability, to bring peace and safety to those in their nation. That's why it's God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil and for the punishment of evildoers. Now that's what America is here to do. And that's why my righteous soul gets vexed. I don't care about their skin color. I don't care about their upbringing. All I care about is, are they a threat to the society? And if they are, then God has created civil government to be an avenger to execute wrath. Now, when they won't do that, God will have to step in. Now, men have abdicated this role. There's no question about that. But it doesn't lessen the guilt of those who rebel. Whoever resists the authority, resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. Now, this is an unwritten rule. It's what happened in Sodom. It's what happened before the flood. It's what happened in Israel. It's what's happening today. Ungodly people resisting authority are still violating God's law. That is not righteousness. Now, they get away with it. But with everyone getting away with it, everybody else starts to get lax. But we can't. Not if we want to be righteous. Not if we want to be like Lot. Our soul has to be vexed. We can't participate with them, but we can't give them a pass even. We have to understand, this is wrong. That judge who did this was violating God's law. And I'm not happy about that. Now, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not going to go grab a gun. I'm not going to go out and do anything. I'm not going to have any civil disobedience. Well, I've got to pray. Oh, you're just going to pray? No, I'm going to pray, because that's the solution to this. We have to leave it to God. There's nothing really that we can do. Now, again, the purpose for this lesson is not so much to talk about all these things, although I think they're important, and I think, at least I hope, I brought each one of us face-to-face in the mirror to see what kind of a person we are and what kind of damage our culture has done to our ethics and what kind of damage it's done to our core convictions, and whether we still feel this with all of our heart or whether we've gotten lax because of our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, and they're not measuring up. Therefore, let's lower the standards. We can't do that. Not if we want to be like Lot. We can't control the society, but we can control our home, our hearts, and what's going on in the church. And so you can read through that. I'm not going to read it right now, because we're going to be looking at it again in our next sermon as we go through this series. But I just kind of wanted to lay a foundation here, because there's such a moral stupor. And I didn't say stupid. I said there's a moral stupor, a spirit of laxity, and a spirit of, what's the word I want? Folly. A spirit of anarchy. It's everywhere. You can't even turn on the television without seeing it. On the news, in the TV programs. It's just, it's everywhere. It's all around us. And evil companionship can corrupt. So, brethren, we need to take stock. I don't see it turning at this point. Now, might. Maybe we'll get a good war and half the people in the country will die and everybody else will say, you know, we better get back to God. You praying for that? I'm not praying for that. I don't want that. But it doesn't matter what I want anymore. God's going to take over. Because he won't let this go on. He can't. Because he'll lose the very purpose for nations, and that is to find his good seed in the midst of all the ungodly people. But at some point, all he could find was Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah. All he could find was Noah before the flood. All he could find was Jeremiah before the destruction of Jerusalem. That's where it goes. And as the churches decrease in size, we have to start looking and saying to ourselves, look, all the righteous people are disappearing one after another. And at some point, God's going to say, there's not enough salt. There's not enough light. I don't think it's America anymore. I think it's Western civilization. I think the whole culture of Western civilization is rotting to the core because they pulled out the power, which is God. For centuries, God was the epicenter of their law, of their art, of their entertainment. It was all everywhere, all the time. Now it's gone. So now you know how I feel. I guess that doesn't matter. Let's open up our songbooks to number 501. And let's just think for a minute. How did this sermon hit you? You have that, Mark? You sigh and cry? Are you like righteous Lot, whose righteous soul was vexed and tormented with the ungodly, lawless deeds of the people around him? Is that you? Is that me? Or are we creeping? Are we drifting? Are we compromising? Are we the same person as we have to witness other people setting aside? People we love. People we care about who are setting it aside. What do I do? Well, do I compromise? Or do they vex my righteous soul too? It's a tough call. But the righteous know which side to go on. As we sing the song of encouragement this evening, if there's anyone in the audience who understands what we're talking about tonight, feels some danger, feels some concern, maybe, oh, I better be a more faithful Christian because we don't know what's going to happen, or I better start being more vexed, or I better turn off those television programs that are glorifying this stuff, or maybe I need to be baptized into Christ. Whatever it might be, if we can help you, we invite you to come right now while we stand and sing.